He kōna I purangi tēnei nā te reo irirangi o Aotearoa.
This is Media Watch. I'm Colin Peacock. As if our media didn't have enough to worry about right now, artificial intelligence is on the scene. It threatens to take the eyeballs of the audience even further away from the outlets which produce our news, but it's also a tool they can use to produce news, even the outlets which are warning us about AI's destructive potential. That's later on. But first, the future of TV news and current affairs is still in the balance after news of planned cuts at TVNZ News and the complete closure of News Hub. And this week, the media have been asking the government how it might get involved. Now, in one sense, it already is, because it puts hundreds of millions of dollars of our money into the media every year. But does it have a plan for that now that TV news seems to have hit a crunch point?
TVNZ's chief executive faced further questioning today in an all-staff meeting over proposed cuts, including the cancellation of Sunday and Fair Go.
One News wasn't allowed to film today's meeting, but it's understood that chief executive Jodie O'Donnell was asked if she'd apologise for how she handled a meeting on Friday.
The meeting on Friday was a lot, but I thought robust. A lot of really upset people had a chance to...
That was TVNZ One News on the crisis of cuts to news and current affairs in its own newsroom. The news rocked the state-owned broadcaster when the cuts were announced 4 days earlier. In fact, it rocked the entire media industry, coming just 1 week after the offshore owners of News Hub announced a plan to close that completely by mid-year. No one was completely shocked by either development, though, given the financial strife that the local media industry is known to be in. But it seems no one had foreseen New Zealand ending up with just one TV news operation, alongside Whakaata Māori, offering national news to an audience of hundreds of thousands of people that still tune in at 6 p.m. or later on demand. Or that there could be no TV current affairs shows left at all within weeks, and as Simon Dallow mentioned there on One News, also no Fair Go, just 3 years shy of half a century as one of New Zealand's most popular, and in its own terms, profitable, local TV shows of all time. Yvonne Tahina's report for One News on Monday also pointed out that the staff of the show were actually working on the next episode of Fair Go when that staff meeting was held.
Garth Bray says his team has received plenty of support as they try to find a way to keep going.
But surely this is about more than just money. It's about giving people a fair go, maybe giving us a fair go too.
And all that raised a question: what's a fair go according to the government? Well, with that in mind, there was a much-anticipated meeting earlier that same day on Monday on TVNZ's Breakfast Show.
Media and Communications Minister Melissa Lee says she's working on a bill to improve the sector and joins us now. Morena, Minister.
After the shock announcement last week and the week before, the Minister of Media, Melissa Lee, seemed not keen on sitting down with the media, including Media Watch. And as we heard on Media Watch last weekend, the Minister gave some comments to political reporters who doorstepped her in the corridors of Parliament, but a full week went by before she spoke to RNZ's Checkpoint, and by the time the Media Minister was on News Talk ZB's drive show just 1 hour later, the news was out that TVNZ's cuts were coming the next morning, but the Minister was out of the loop on that too.
They did not tell me that they were cutting staff on news.
And then it was TV and radio silence again from the Minister for the rest of the week. On RNZ's Morning Report political panel, the Herald's political editor, Claire Trevett, was not impressed.
National didn't have a broadcasting policy. We're still not quite sure what they're looking at. She needs to basically scrub up on what she's going to be saying on any given day, to be honest, and get her head around her own portfolio, because at the moment she's not looking that great.
Though happily for us here at Media Watch, the Minister's office had by then been in touch to tell us the Minister, Melissa Lee, would speak to us this week, last Thursday. Good news for us at that time. Last Sunday, TVNZ's Q&A show told their viewers they had no such luck.
We had hoped to speak to the Broadcasting Minister about the situation, but she declined our interview request for the third consecutive week.
And later that day on News Talk ZB, the former Prime Minister Helen Clark was scathing.
Hang on, you know, I've been in the public eye. You have to front, front the decisions.
I'm not sure she's covered herself in glory in the last week or two.
And at News Hub, where staff have the threat of closure hanging over them, AM show host Lloyd Burr took to social media with his frustration.
There's a broadcasting industry crisis and the broadcasting minister is MIA. We've tried for 10 days to get her on the show to talk about the state of it, and she's either refused or not responded. She doesn't even have a press secretary. What a shambles.
And a switch of acting press secretaries mid-crisis did seem to be a part of the problem. One was in place, though, by Monday, and he got in touch with us here at Media Watch to arrange our interview later in the week. But by 6pm that same day, they changed their minds. Because the minister will soon be taking a paper to Cabinet on her plan for the media, they said,
"We feel it would better serve your listeners if the minister came on at a time when she could discuss in depth about the details of her plan for the future of media, as opposed to the limited information she will be able to provide this Thursday. When the Cabinet process has been completed, the minister is able to say more. That time is not now."
And that was disappointing. Melissa Lee has long been the spokesperson on media and broadcasting for the National Party, and Media Watch has been asking for a chat with her since last December about a range of things, not just the Cabinet paper. On Friday, the New Zealand Herald's editor-at-large, Shane Curry, who writes as Media Insider, reported that he'd had a similar response and a similar interview cancelled for exactly the same reasons. And he got an acknowledgement from the Prime Minister's office that it had advised Melissa Lee not to do any in-depth interviews until she has more to say about developments in her portfolio. And among those, it cited the Select Committee report on the Fair Digital News Bargaining Bill, the one that could compel the likes of Google and Facebook to pay the makers of New Zealand news. But that report isn't due until May. So, while the shrinking of the news media is clearly rapid and urgent, it seems whatever levers to be pulled by the government and how hard won't be discussed in any detail by the minister for weeks. The Herald's Shane Media Insider Curry declared it poor media management that some outlets have been obliged this week and not others. The minister's office has pointed out to Media Watch this week and others that Melissa Lee has done some broadcast interviews over the last week in which they said she has essentially traversed as much ground as possible right now. So, what clues then can we glean from those? Well, in that interview with TVNZ's breakfast show on Monday, it seemed that even though this government is breaking records for changes made under urgency, nothing would happen for the media in a hurry here.
I have been working with my officials to understand, actually bring the concerns from the sector to have a discussion with my official, to work with me to understand what the levers the government can actually pull to help the sector.
TVNZ's Anna Burns-Francis then went on to ask the minister if, considering that commercial revenue slumping was part of the problem, her proposals could include making TVNZ or some of its channels commercial-free.
Well, I think we are working through many options as to what could potentially help the sector rather than specifically TVNZ.
And the one detail Melissa Lee did reveal was that the Broadcasting Act of 1989 is now in play, something that the previous government also said was on its to-do list for the media, but that it didn't get around to between 2017 and 2023. Now, that Act is a pretty broad piece of legislation which sets out the broadcasting standards regime and the complaints processes and electoral broadcasting rules and also the remit of the government broadcasting funding agency, New Zealand On Air. It also has long-standing prohibitions on TV advertising on Sunday mornings and two public holidays, which commercial broadcasters have long wanted dumped. But a few more slots for whiteware and waka kotahi ads in the schedules isn't going to save news and current affairs, especially in this economy. And it's not immediately clear what reform of the Broadcasting Act could really do for news media sustainability. Now, that also came up in a long chat the minister had with The Platform, which she did have time for last Wednesday. And in it, host Sean Plunkett urged the minister not to do much to ease the financial pain of the mainstream media. And he was alarmed to hear Melissa Lee say that the playing field needed to be levelled up by extending regulation of TV and radio broadcasting to online operations.
Are you seriously considering the government imposing a tax on certain large companies and paying that money directly to your chosen media companies that are asking for it?
I have actually said that I oppose the bill, but I think what needs to be done as a minister is you have to listen to the sector. They might have some good ideas.
No, minister, don't you need to listen to the people of New Zealand? Because the sector is always going to act in self-interest.
Yes, I'm talking about people who have submitted to the news.
And when Sean Plunkett suggested that Melissa Lee should just let the market decide and let loose the forces of creative destruction, well, Melissa Lee said she wasn't keen on that either. And some of the platform's listeners were not keen on that.
Lee is leaning woke. One way or another, she will bail them out, says Ross.
Oh, my goodness. I think I am far from woke.
But while the minister gave next to nothing away in her interviews this week, the law as it stands does oblige TVNZ services to be freely accessible and available for free to all New Zealanders. So could that then change to allow TVNZ to become partly a pay TV operation for its most popular or premium stuff? Well, that was a question also put to her this week on TVNZ's breakfast show.
TVNZ has a statement of intent that refers to our content being readily accessible. Presumably that means to all Kiwis. So would that include free-to-air television?
Well, ready accessibility would actually mean that it is free, right? Or,
yes.
You know, it could be behind a paywall, but it is available because they have connectivity.
Well, a paywall would imply you have to pay for it, so that wouldn't be readily accessible for all New Zealanders.
On Tuesday, the Minister, Melissa Lee, also fronted up on the AM show, whose host Lloyd Burr had said they'd spent 10 days chasing a chat with her. And she reiterated that any levers to be pulled would not be yanked in a hurry. And Melissa Chan Green bridled when the Minister referred to the long-term decline of linear real-time broadcast TV as a reason for the cuts now being proposed at TVNZ and NewsHub.
To think that NewsHub is a linear TV business is to misunderstand actually what the business NewsHub is, because we have a website, we have an app, we have streaming services, we've done radio, we've done podcasts. So how much more multimedia do you think businesses need to be to survive?
I'm not just talking about that, but I mean, there are elements of the Broadcasting Act, which actually is, you know, providing not fair playing field for everyone. For example, you know, advertising doesn't actually, you know, there are restrictions on broadcasters where there are no restrictions for streamers.
Now, on both the breakfast show and the AM show this week, Melissa Lee repeated the point that the effectiveness of hundreds of millions of dollars of public money for broadcasting each year is at stake and at risk if the broadcasters that carry the content are cut back to just a commercial core.
Government actually puts in some close to, I think, $300 million a year.
Do you think then that funding should be extended to include the kind of current affairs programs that are getting cut?
As I said, I have my own views as to what could be done, but even New Zealand On Air operates at an arm's length from me as Minister of Media and Communications.
Now, it's only in recent years that New Zealand On Air has been in the business of allocating public money to news and journalism on a contestable basis. When the system was set up 35 years ago, that was out of bounds for the organisation because broadcasters becoming dependent on the public purse for it was thought to be something to avoid because of the potential for conflict of interest or political interference, either through editorial meddling or turning off the tap. Now, that began to break down when the TV broadcasters stopped funding programs about news and politics, which didn't pull a commercial crowd, and New Zealand On Air then started picking up the tab from a fund for so-called special interest shows, which couldn't be made or screened in a wholly commercial environment. Online initiatives with a public interest purpose have also been funded in recent years, in addition to programs for established TV broadcasters. And then, in 2020, New Zealand On Air was given the job of handing out $55 million over 3 years right across the media from the Public Interest Journalism Fund. Now, that was done at arm's length from the government, but in opposition, National aggressively opposed the fund, and senior MPs, including Melissa Lee, claimed or at least questioned whether that money made the media compliant or even silent when it came to covering anything that might make the Labor government look bad. So it would be a big surprise if Melissa Lee's plans for Cabinet actually include the direct funding of news and current affairs programs, which now look set to vanish from our TV screens and on-demand apps within weeks. This week, New Zealand On Air's Chief Executive Cameron Harland responded to the crisis with this statement.
We are in active discussions with the broadcasters and the wider sector to understand what the implications of their cost-cutting might be. This is a complex and developing situation, and whilst we acknowledge the uncertainty, we will be doing what we can to ensure our funding is utilised in the best possible ways to serve local audiences.
As the Minister herself has said this past week, that is a big chunk of change, and it looks bigger all the time as the revenues of our commercial media companies shrivel up. And whatever levers the Minister is thinking of pulling, and hopefully we will hear from her about that here on Media Watch. As we heard the Broadcasting Minister say earlier, the commercial TV broadcaster's current crisis has been some time in the making. And this week, when the Prime Minister was asked about it last Monday, his response was reported by Radio Waitea like this.
The Prime Minister says the media sector is no different to any other sectors trying to deal with changing consumer behaviour and outdated business models.
It requires lots of innovation, and media companies will need to innovate just like every other company does in every other sector that's gone through tough and challenging and structural challenges. But I want to be quite clear, the ability for the government to step in and to be able to subsidise media companies is probably not the pathway that we will be looking to go down.
And that's a response that's hard to hear for executives of media companies big and small. In fact, especially the small ones. Innovating and following the audience really means going digital and online, where most news is free. And unless you can get enough supporters or subscribers to pay up, that means trying to attract digital advertising, and the vast bulk of the revenue from that goes offshore, because the companies that corner the market are allowed to operate mostly unregulated, not to mention lightly taxed. Next week, we look at what kind of innovation might actually help.
Let's get rid of these demarcations, because it's not economic. And we need to use the technology that's available to us, and we need to educate the audience that it's going to be delivered differently.
This week here at Media Watch, we also spoke again to several people in management roles and in journalism at TVNZ and NewsHub about their response to the closure of the news services that are now on the table. But none were willing to speak on the record, while those are just proposals and counter-proposals are being prepared, they say, to save some news programs and journalist jobs. The main media workers union, E2, says the consultation with TVNZ staff has been too short, not fair and possibly even illegal, and it is resisting the plan.
This is not just about job losses for us, so we're asking you to back us as we fight to protect your stories, because every New Zealander deserves to tell their story.
And more than 2 weeks after the proposal to close NewsHub, consultation with its journalists has been extended into next week. So we will follow up on all that next week and beyond here on Media Watch. As we've heard today, the business model that established news media are operating is creaking, partly because digital technology has changed the way we all consume our media, and also because of where the advertising revenue's going. And there's another tech-driven challenge now in play as well, artificial intelligence. AI threatens to take the audience even further away from the outlets which produce our news, but it's also a tool they can use to produce news. And as Hayden Donnell now reports, even an outlet here, which has warned darkly about AI's destructive potential for journalism and acted to keep AI companies at arm's length, is also now using it.
Readers browsing the country's most popular news site were beckoned by an enticing headline last week. Stuff Poll says Christchurch NZ's best place, it began, before adding, New Plymouth not happy about it. The headline contained two crucial selling points for news: controversy and a metaphysical conundrum. First of all, is Christchurch truly New Zealand's best place? Could it be that Stuff reader polls are somehow wrong? But more importantly, how is New Plymouth, a metropolitan centre not blessed with the gift of consciousness, able to express unhappiness? Does a cloud roll off Mount Taranaki and hang over the city to signal its displeasure? Do the waves crash more angrily on Fitzroy Beach? The story didn't answer those questions, perhaps because it was written by another entity which has not been awakened to the joy, confusion, and dread of mortal existence. A Stand First at the top of the story explains that it was assembled by a robot.
This story was summarised from original Stuff reporting and published member comments using generative AI tool ChatGPT, with oversight and editing from Stuff journalists.
ChatGPT had scanned hundreds of Stuff reader comments under a poll asking them to pick the best place to live in New Zealand, and churned out an article summarising the results. This may have struck some as a slightly strange thing for Stuff to publish, given its leaders have been outspoken about the threat AI poses to journalism. Sinead Boucher warned about an AI-driven potential media apocalypse at a recent Select Committee hearing on the proposed Fair Digital News Bargaining Bill.
In the last year, we have seen the rise of AI technology that has been hailed as a game changer for humanity by the tech companies who own it, but which at its core is an egregious wholesale theft of our content and intellectual property. For the news media globally, this development is looking increasingly like an extinction-level event.
But this isn't some Media Watch gotcha. Stuff has raised concerns about AI scraping its journalism to train its large language models and reproducing that content for profit. But a fair reading of its AI policies allows room for it to do things like summarise its polling data on New Zealand's best city, provided there's a human editor overseeing the final product. Boucher posited some other potential use cases for AI in an interview with Media Watch last year.
For example, you know, text reports based on business company results or sport results and things like that. So that's a labour-saving thing. There's no IP in that. We don't do it. I wouldn't say that for any reason particularly. We just don't do it at the moment, but lots of companies do. So that's an assistant in some way because it allows the journalists to focus on stories that where human insight, human creativity, empathy, human connection, all of those things are really important.
At least one media organisation in New Zealand has already been using AI for one of those purposes. Business Desk employs ChatGPT to put together its stock exchange coverage, an initiative its managing editor Matt Martell says saves time and frees its reporters up for other tasks.
We process NZX announcements into articles, which used to take us a minimum of 30 minutes and now takes us under 30 seconds.
The real issue with Stuff's latest AI story is not so much the company's editorial policies, but that its whole existence is a grave sin against writing and perhaps creativity itself. Its writing isn't so much terrible as unsettling, existing in a kind of uncanny valley between sense and nonsense. David Farrier, the journalist and author of the blog Webworm, highlighted what he called horrific passages from the story, including...
New Plymouth enthusiasts' comments painted a picture of a utopia where you could hit the slopes and surf waves without losing your parking spot.
As one New Plymouth resident asked on the X Twitter X, how often do you lose your parking spot while surfing? But that sentence was far from an isolated example.
Stuff tossed this question into the ring, and New Zealanders, never shy to back their own patch, came out swinging with opinions as varied as flavours in a Whittaker's sampler.
Other journalists also took a cudgel to the AI-generated work. The Spinoff's Madeline Chapman wrote an article headlined, "Oh no, turns out AI sucks at writing." But the reality is AI articles are unlikely to stay this horrible forever. Stuff's travesty is likely just an initial encroachment in AI's inevitable annexation of land traditionally occupied by journalists. I asked Chapman how journalists can continue to stake out ground for themselves as AI improves. Kia ora, Madeline. Welcome to Media Watch.
Thank you. Great to be here.
What did you think of the writing quality in Stuff's AI story?
I thought it was very bad, but that sort of potentially hides the reasons behind it was bad. Obviously, the quality was bad. You know, it was one of those things that had all of the right words, but not a correct sentence somehow.
Yes. Yes. Because I've been thinking about this, because some of the words are okay on their own, some of the phrases are okay on their own. They seem kind of fine when you take them in isolation, but when you read it all together, it has this weird, uncanny valley character to it, which is makes sense. It's written by a robot.
That is what it was like reading this, where if you read it fast enough, you went, oh yeah, I think I'm getting everything. And then if you actually paid attention, you're like, wait a minute, nothing is in the right order. None of these actually really make sense next to each other. But approached kind of quick enough and with enough of a skim, you kind of maybe could get away with it. It's just unfortunate that it was released the same week that lots of real-life journalists were losing their jobs.
Yeah, so it almost fills you more with, like, an industry-level dread.
Yeah, or a cynical thought of, is this our floor? Is this the bottom of what is going to be accepted in writing for journalism?
Yeah, and I guess if we just expose people to it, maybe they'll just get used to this kind of output and just accept it.
There might be a bunch of people who read an article written by AI and say, actually, I got what I wanted out of that. I didn't need a lovely writer's flourish in there. But at the same time, I think we are constantly trying to encourage particularly local readers to want to support financially their local journalism. And a very common response is for readers to then pick the absolute worst thing that they've read on each outlet's site and say, well, I would never pay for this. You know, it's a bit flawed because, you know, if you have a Netflix subscription, it's not expected that you like 100% of the shows on Netflix. You get it because there's some stuff that you really do like and you want to consume it.
But it doesn't seem to anger people in the same way, eh? They're producing bad stuff on Netflix. And there is a lot of bad.
So I think for me, I'm a bit like, I would love for people not to have that approach to journalism because it is an impossible bar to meet to have every single thing that you publish be somebody's like favourite thing that they want to pay for. But at the same time, if that is the approach that lots of people are taking, you really don't want to have the thing that they pick out be, well, literally a robot wrote this and it doesn't make any sense. So ideally we would lift up from that to help counter that argument.
There's also potentially an issue for journalists, working journalists, if it gets better. It is already taking tasks that were done by humans, and some of those are the boring tasks like transcribing, but a market report would have been done by a journalist before. Is there any point in resisting that, though? If an AI can do your job, is your job worth doing?
You know, when you say, well, there used to be a person who wrote market reports, these weren't necessarily highly sought after journalism jobs. So potentially that person writing market report would love to be writing something with a bit more of themselves, you know, their own style in it. But obviously that's not, you don't just give somebody a new job if a robot starts doing their job. We will have to figure out ways that we use technology in ways that are helpful, and then we make sure that we are still doing things that only a real life person can do.
There must be a temptation to cut costs if you can get stuff to be done by robots.
You know, to give stuff credit, they did not put an AI in charge of writing the front page investigation. It's a poll that staff put on their own site, and it was their own comments on their own site. You know, it's a fairly low stakes thing to be producing, and evidently it's a topic that interests people. It gets people to click on it. And if that helps them generate some revenue so that they can then continue to do investigations or other things, you know, maybe that is just the future. You know, we do put out a lot of funny stuff. Not everybody thinks it's funny, and that's fine. But we know that we do it in a way that no one else in New Zealand media does, human or otherwise. And so we're realising that that is a thing that we have that is completely unique to us that won't be overtaken, I hope, by AI anytime soon. And so we'll be making sure that we keep doing that.
I guess that's the unknown though, right? Just thinking, you just got to hope that people will continue to want stuff that's produced by humans that is unique to their voice and that they'll be willing to pay for it. But is there any guarantee of that?
Not really, but I think we've seen some really promising things recently when we have decided to really hone in on things that are like extremely specific. A perfect example was Thursday, Joel McManus went and sat in the Wellington City Council meeting where they voted on the district plan. And technically you could have a robot recording, transcribing, but Joel, being somebody who is obsessed with Wellington's district plan and has written about it extensively for the past 6 weeks, he was able to take all that information and very quickly summarise it and put it out with some thoughtful analysis every 20 minutes for people to tune in, even if you'd never heard of the district plan before. And we did see, one, both a lot of people showing great interest in that live blog, and two, a lot of people then willing to support or donate as a result and basically pay for it and said this was worth paying for. So we've realised that, much like the Netflix thing, if you have a hit show, people will join just for that.
Do you at the Spinoff have an AI policy?
We have an internal agreed upon policy. We don't have a public policy. I think because everything is flowing so quickly and we have no intention, certainly in the near future, to have front-facing AI writing, basically, But we do encourage people to use transcription services if it helps, or, you know, things that help them in the process of forming their story. But anything that would be front-facing, that's, yeah, we are not interested in doing that at the moment, and so we do not have a front-facing policy, but it is something that we're discussing.
This is a slightly dire thing to end on, but the industry is shrinking. We're losing hundreds of journalists at News Hub and TVNZ. There's going to be far fewer journalists in future, cranking out a whole bunch more stuff, having to cover a whole lot wider area. Could it be that we sort of turn around in 5 years and go, thank God for AI, we'd never have been able to actually crank out enough coverage without it?
Well, I guess the question is, what's enough coverage? We publish between 8 and 10 stories a day, and that feels like enough. And I would say our headcount in another newsroom might be expected to publish 20 stories a day. We are continuing to adjust to see if it really is a matter of quantity, or if, again, people are willing to pay for something if they know that a lot of work has gone into it and it's something that no one else can do and this is the only place they can get it. I think maybe I'm potentially, you could either say pragmatic or helpless, in that I kind of go, well, whatever does happen, people will find ways to innovate with it and they will find ways to make it work. And a media company launch now would operate, you would hope, very differently from a media company that launched 30 years ago or 50 years ago. Therefore, they would be probably a little bit better suited to be able to figure out these things from the beginning.
The good news for us is that we don't have to do the innovation immediately, because, as we saw this week, AI is still crap at writing. But thank you very much for appearing on Media Watch, Madeline Chapman.
That was the Spin-Offs editor Madeline Chapman there, talking to Hayden Donnell about AI and whether it's a blessing or a curse for journalism and journalists today. This week on Midweek Media Watch, our weekly catch-up each Wednesday with Emile Donovan on nights here on RNZ National, we took a look back at a bonanza of live news that unfolded in our media around 4 p.m. last Monday. The end of the second test against Australia, the Prime Minister's post-cabinet media conference at the Beehive, and the Oscars being handed out in LA all unfolded at the same time, as well as a terrifying drama in the air.
There was just mass chaos going on around. Everyone was, they were on the floor, they were on top of each other, bags were everywhere. My shoes were several rows back.
Something for everyone in the news last Monday afternoon. On Midweek Media Watch, I also looked at the frenzy over that royal photo, US politics satirised by Scarlett Johansson and fact-checked by journalists on TikTok, and the leap year community struggles.
Does that mean if you are 84 that today you turn 21? And if so, then do we have many 21-year-old, 84-year-olds today? 84-year-olds,
Wow, man, you're blowing my mind here.
If you missed it, Midweek Media Watch is on the Media Watch page of the RNZ website, our section of the RNZ app, or available for free wherever you get your podcasts. And we'll be back again with more on the media in Midweek Media Watch next Wednesday after 9:30 on Wednesday night. And then back again with Media Watch at the same time next weekend here on RNZ National.